You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
We're kind of back from a road trip. We just got back from the International Steampunk Symposium up in Cincinnati, Ohio. And what you'll be hearing here shortly is the live podcast we recorded while we're up there. So thanks to anyone who actually showed up for that thing. We actually had a pretty good crowd of people to, you know, a lot of first time listeners too. So it was interesting. People actually showed up to hear what crazy shit we had to say.
Absolutely.
So without further ado, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
Well, we're smoking the H. Upman, the Banker, but we're smoking a different variation of it. So this is the Arbitrage, and this is basically a re-blended version of the traditional Banker.
The story of the Banker is, back in 1844, German bankers Carl and Hermann Upman traveled to Cuba, where they created an exceptionally unique cigar. They successfully locked it away in their vaults, only to give it out to their most important clients. And eventually, like I said, that something based on that blend became the H. Upman Banker. But people wondered, what did that original 1844 cigar taste like? And this is kind of a imitation as close to that original blend as we can come up with today.
Absolutely. So, you know, this cigar sports a Ecuadorian Habano wrapper. You've got filler from
Cuban seed tobacco from Nicaragua and the Dominican.
Yep. And so you're going to have those spicy notes. You're going to, you know, this is definitely going to come in, you know, more on the full side. You know, the blend here is actually not quite as spicy, you know, on the initial light as I was anticipating. So, you know, this to me,
I mean, I've not smoked a lot. I've smoked a few of the Bankers, but you smoke those a lot more regularly than I do. How does this compare to the original Banker for you?
So, you know, as of right now, this is actually a little bit milder and less spicy than what I traditionally, you know, get out of the Banker. But, you know, this is also a different size, and it's the initial light. And you know, I don't know. I mean, we've been drinking some whiskey and some other stuff today, so, you know, maybe
you'll find out about that on a future episode.
Yes. You know, so maybe that's playing into my palate a little bit, so the cigar maybe, you know, doesn't quite have the strength because of the drinks I've been drinking have been stronger than maybe what the cigar flavor is.
Yeah, this, like I said, it's a good medium, but it's on the fuller side of medium for me, but it definitely not. It's not super strong, but it does have a lot of flavor. And, you know, the theme of this week for our live show was poker. So, I mean, I figure a banker goes, because you got to have money to play poker. You know, you can't play poker unless you're, you know, you got the bankroll to support your play. So,
I mean, you can always get that shit on credit, but you might lose your kneecap.
Yeah. Yeah, you walk into the Russians place with three stacks of high society, and yeah, bad things happen.
Hey, you know, I mean, hey, who
just
knows?
Just watch how you twist your Oreos, you'll be all right. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
It's not the hand that you dealt, but how you playing your cards. You got a brother feeling mellow like a Cuban cigar. You truly a star, we'll take the days one at a time. I think we make the perfect pair, cause you my one of a kind. I say we make a full house, live out the family dreams. No jokers, no jacks, just kings and queens. And we should leave the clubs alone and take trips to islands. Give you all of my heart and flood your hand with diamonds. No, you're living like a player, stop chasing the holes. I never put you in the shuffle, use my ace in the hole. I live a life full of riches, we got places to go. So no bluffing, no rushing, just taking it slow. Let your man do the hustling while you lay in the shade. I'll throw a deuce to the haters, call a spade. And let you know I'll never hurt you. Baby girl, you made me hurry up and wait. And I know patience is a virtue. Play your cards right, baby. Just might get this.
Play your cards right, baby.
That's right. Oh.
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
We're recording live this week at the International Steampunk Symposium in Cincinnati, Ohio. And we actually have, you know, an audience. Thank y'all for coming out. I mean, she's just us talking to ourselves in a basement, so it's, you know, if no one showed up, it'd have been about the same. If this is the first time hearing the show, basically, what this, it's not, the name kind of confused people at the time. It's not a, we're not going to talk about cigars for an hour. If you want to see that panel, come tomorrow when we do Intro to Cigars. Basically, it's about the nerdy stuff we talk about when we're hanging out having a cigar. Since we are, the theme for this year's show is Alice in Wonderland, so we're like, what kind of goes with that? And we're like, well, there's cards in Alice in Wonderland, so poker, found that that was like a good topic to go with.
Yeah, Queen of Hearts, tie in together, so figured we'd talk about some cards.
And basically, like, poker is probably one of the most American sports. I mean, it's blown up here, and it's kind of filtered through pop culture throughout history. I mean, just starting off, there's so many, like, just phrases that you use in everyday language that came from poker. Like, you know, when you're trying to tell somebody, you know, we're going to speak the truth now, you're like, we're going to lay all our cards on the table. I mean, that's coming from, you know, the end of a poker hand, putting your cards on the table and finally showing whether or not you've been bluffing your ass off and only have a seven deuce, or if you really do have the aces.
So, yep, the other aspect of that is ace in the hole or whatever, you know, just talking about kind of the pre-flop, if you will. But, you know,
say like it was like I said, dealing from the bottom deck, you know, that's from cheating and whatnot, you know. And what was it? I mean, even poker in like the military and stuff. I mean, back in World War II, a poker deck was part of your standard issue of equipment because, you know, people need to have something to do in their downtime. I mean, and really, you know, going to war is kind of gambling with your life anyway, so you might as well gamble on some cards while you're at it.
Well, you even get that in modern times. I mean, you know, there for a long time with, you know, the war in the Middle East and everything. You
yeah,
know,
there was all those poker decks that had the most wanted guy. And it, even the back in the World War II, they printed, like, pictures of aircraft and stuff on the cards to, you know, to kind of train them to identify friendly and enemy aircraft. And so it's kind of like, you know, you're playing a game, but you're also learning something at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's kind of interesting, you know, from poker from an American perspective versus, you know, taking it, here we are at the, you know, Steampunk Symposium. So, you know, let's take it back quite a few years. And, you know, really the origins of poker is still very much a gray area. You know, people don't truly know where poker itself originated the way we know it today. And, you know, all throughout history, people have tried to come up with their own different variations and games that, you know, sometimes were not so popular. You know, it really wasn't up until, you know, the 90s when we had the real big poker boom that really, you know, started getting televised and then the internet and stuff to that effect. That
yeah, because, I mean, ever since, what, the late 60s when they first started the World Series of Poker at, you know, Binion's Casino, that's kind of when Texas Hold'em is like the most popular game day. That's when that kind of really started, because that was considered like a true gambler's game, because it was like when you're playing draw poker, there's two options to bet, but with Hold'em, there's four options to bet. So it was kind of a card game that the professional gamblers wanted to use so they could take advantage of the tourists. Like the old saying goes, if you don't, you can't tell the mark at the table, you're the mark.
I don't know. I mean, that's you know, for me as a poker player, that's one of the things that I truly enjoy. It's not so much about the cards that are on the table. It's learning your opponent and the psychological aspect of poker behind it. You know, some of the, you know, real true poker players will say, man, this game can be played without even having a deck of cards. All that is just for show.
Yeah, I mean, with, like, especially Texas Hold'em, poker's like one of the few sports that you're encouraged to lie. I mean, you can't cheat. Well, you can cheat, but if you're caught, the bad things are going to happen to you. But, yeah, it's one of the few games where, you know, lying is encouraged. I mean, like, you know, bluffing. That's another term that, like, people use all the time that, you know, originated in poker. But as you were talking about the big poker boom in the 90s, at the time that the, like, all the World Poker Tour and all those other things started coming on TV, Binion's Horseshoe Casino, where they've held the World Series of Poker forever, did not have a poker room because, you know, slots machines and stuff like that made the casinos a lot more money than poker.
Oh yeah.
And then it just got so popular that it, you know, made a comeback, and probably the reason that was the invention of the hole camera. That's when, because like, poker's fun to play, but it's boring to watch if you don't have that where you can actually see what kind of cards people are holding. Come on in, guys, join us. yeah, steampunk Boba Fett has entered the building now. Yeah. But yeah, and interesting fact, the hole camera was actually invented by the inventor of the Transformers. So the guy who made the Optimus Prime toys also invented the hole camera.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, I mean, you know, that, like you said, it's boring if you never see the cards, and, you know, it really gives you kind of that insight to, I don't know, you know, sports teams. You sit there and you study your opponents and what's going on as far as what their game plans are and their typical makeups, and, you know, seeing how professional poker players play, you know, according to their hand, you know, really makes the amateur player feel like that, oh, I can really step into the ring with the Incas and I stand a chance, you know, to actually win here.
And that's the thing, when they started making all those poker TV shows, originally they were like, you know, these professional gamblers aren't going to want to show their cards, but then they've got egos like everybody else, and when this stuff blew up, they're like, oh, we're celebrities now. Like, yeah, we'll let you see our cards and, you know, make you think you know what we're going to do, and then we're just going to take more of your money anyway.
I don't know. It's always interesting to me reading, you know, whether it be a Phil Hellmuth and some of his books that he's put out or something, and you see the strategies that he talks about in the books, and you see nothing of that in his actual play. So, you know, it's always, you know, an interesting dynamic to kind of be like, you know, all right, I'm writing from a marketing aspect more so than trying to actually give people an insight on the way that I would play this game.
Hellmuth's such a narcissist that, you know, he doesn't want, you know, he doesn't think anybody can outplay him anyway. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to tell you what I do, and then I'm still going to beat you, because that's just the asshole he is. But yeah, and, you know, like Doyle Brunson, the godfather of poker, he wrote pretty much what everyone considers the Bible of poker, the Super System books. I mean, and that thing is like, when it first came out, it was like a $100 book, but people bought it because, you know, it really was was basically a how-to book to, like, you want to be a professional gambler, learn this book.
Well, I mean, you know, if you can take two WSOP bracelets with a 10-deuce offset, I mean, by all means.
Oh, yeah, I have a theory. I read his book, and that guy is like, I mean, had like a cancer flare up twice where they're like, you're going to die. Like, go ahead and like say goodbye. And a week later, he's like in remission. So I have a theory. It's like Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey where they have to play death to get out of hell. Shows up for Doyle. All right, let's just shuffle up and deal. And he just, you know, beats him out. The dude's going to be immortal because, you know, it's.
I don't know. I feel like oftentimes, you know, so much of that can be, you know, dependent on a person's mindset. You know, if you go into something and you're already defeated, your body's not going to respond more so than if you go into it with, hey, I'm going to beat this. I've got the upper hand. I'm going to, you know, walk away. Like,
okay, like, that was at one point I actually was dumb enough to think I could become a professional poker player. It got so close to the point where I was like, all right, because this thing, you don't have to make millions of dollars to be a professional gambler. You just have to make enough to pay your bills. Like, you know, you make $400 a week. So, you know, as long as you're making $400 a week, your bills are still getting paid, whether you're working at McDonald's or you're playing poker. Like, and I came up with a number. Like, all right, this is what I have to survive on. If I can come up with this amount of money to, like, give me 6 months to give it a try, I will go and do it. But, yeah, I'm too broke to ever give it the full try. And, like, another reason, like I said, that whole 90s boom was also the internet gambling before they made that illegal. And Chris Moneymaker, he was a guy that pretty much lost everything gambling. He was an accountant, and it got to the point where he had entered an online tournament. It was like a $40 entry fee because he thought it was going to be like a cash game. He's like, all right, I need $8,000 to pay off my credit cards. And then he found out, oh, if you win this tournament, you get a seat at the World Series of Poker. He's like, but I don't want that. I just want the $8,000 to pay my credit card. So he started trying to, like, go out in fourth place, because fourth place was a cash payout. And finally, one of his buddies is like, dude, I will give you the $8,000. Just win the tournament. You know, this is something you have to try. And so he's like, all right. So he ended up winning one of the seats and then won that year's World Series of Poker off a $40 internet buy-in. So that just made every other, you know, couch gambler think that, oh yeah, I can become a world champion, you know, playing online. And then, like I said, it just exploded. It went from 20 or 30 tables to 200-300 tables a tournament.
Yeah, well, I mean, you see a lot of the free tournaments now that get played in a lot of bars and stuff to that effect, whether it be, you know, a Full Tilt sponsored event, or just about every city now has some sort of poker, you know, free to play type deal. So you just show up and you play in the tournament and everybody's playing for points. And that's always the big caveat. Like, oh, well, we'll either give you, you know, an X percentage payout, or, you know, we'll buy you a seat at the WSOP.
Yeah, that's a little ragging for a $10,000 buy-in.
So.
And speaking of, like, you know, the Chris Moneymaker story, watching the All-In documentary on pretty much the poker explosion, and there was a fact that they have in there. It's like, you know, football's on TV, what, 24 weekends out of the year. Poker is on TV 365 days a year. There's like poker on some channel year-round. Like, you can find it, or at least it was, like, you know, a couple years ago, because that movie came out in 2011, I think, right before they made everything illegal. So yeah, it's truly an American sport. It's
but I mean, it's also got a lot of, you know, Johnny, you know, I mean, it's become, you know, international at that level, you know, in a sense. But, you know, once again, like I said, any amateur can really kind of just leap in, and, you know, sometimes you're going to get lucky. So, you know, a little bit about the history. The other aspect is, you know, some of the films and some of the things that revolve around poker. You know, I kind of assembled, I think, what I consider, anyway, kind of my top five or six films when it comes to poker.
If you go all the way back to, like, the old Western movies, there was a poker game just about in every Western. Yep. If someone's getting a shot in a Western movie, it's either because of a poker game, somebody's a woman, or, like, an Indian attack. That was, like, the three reasons people got killed in Westerns. Or someone got caught cheating at poker. You know, it was,
yes.
They didn't like the outcome, or somebody was a little bit slow on the pulling the ace out of the sleeve.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's, you know, one of the films I really like is A Big Hand for the Little Lady. You know, this is 1955 Western film. But, you know, the plot and the dynamic, and there's such a twist that you would think it was, you know, some M. Night, you know, film or something to that effect, you know, because you just don't see it coming. You know, there's this whole play and you're like, holy crap, you know, people were pulling it off in films in the 1950s, and I would expect that to be something you would see in an Ocean's 11 or an Ocean's 12 in modern times or something. So, you know, it was very interesting to see that whole dynamic come to fruition.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that one. But yeah, even, like, say, old James Bond movies. I mean, he was always playing, like, whatever, Baccarat or something. But then when they did Casino Royale, I mean, it was based around a Texas Hold'em tournament. I mean, that was the whole plot of the movie, was this, you know, these terrorists were basically laundering money through a poker tournament to fund their evil guy. So Bond's got to go in and play poker to stop a terrorist attack. Yeah, it, like I said, I think the book version, it's a different game. But, you know, like I said, nowadays, like, you know, everyone, you know,
I mean, you
people who don't know poker, they know what Texas Hold'em is pretty much. So, like I said, they updated it, 'cause it's definitely mainstream now.
Certainly. So, it's just interesting to me just to see the change and the exposure that things have gotten as time progressed. So, you know, you've got films out there, you know, that specifically, you know, High Roller, the Stu Unger story that revolve around a specific player versus, you know, other, you know, films that are just around the entire sport as a whole.
Yeah, let's talk about the Stu Unger story for a minute. Stu Unger is one of those guys that was an expert at poker. He, like, if all he did was play poker, he was unbeatable. But unfortunately, like most gamblers, you win all your money playing poker and then you lose it on other shit. Like Stu Unger would, like, make millions of dollars playing poker, or he started off playing Pinochle, which I had no, or was it Pinochle?
No, I think that was it.
And Oh, no, it was Gin Rummy. That's what his game was. And I didn't even know you could gamble on Gin Rummy. But when he eventually started playing poker, like, he would, you know, win all this money, and then he would end up losing it sports betting or in the 80s on hookers and coke, which, yeah, that's pretty much every 80s movie downfall. But that was the true story. Because, yeah, he was one of the few people he won back-to-back World Series of Pokers in 81 and 82, I believe, and was one of the youngest players in the tournament and just was... just smoked everybody. But then after that, he pretty much lost it all on other gambling, got into drugs and stuff, and eventually cleaned his life up and went back to poker and won a third tournament in, like, I think it was like 98, something like that. 97 or 98 won, and ended up blowing everything in 6 months. As soon as he, like, had money again, he went back to hookers and coke and, like, was dead a year later. But yeah, to blow $1 million in 6 months, that's some serious
yeah, you've got some serious, you know, hardcore lifestyle choices. But
yeah, but the movie came out 2003, and Michael M. Paroli
Michael Paroli was
the freaking Jersey Mafia TV show.
I'm drawing him.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why we let you come in. Soprano, yeah. The guy from Sopranos, he played Stu Unger in that movie. And Pat Morita from Karate Kid, too, was in it for some reason. He was like a casino owner. But yeah, that movie, like I said, it went through his whole history. Basically, his father was a bookie, and he grew up gambling and hustling people like from a little age. And got to the point where he was literally gambling with his life because he owed the mafia so much money. They're like, go to Vegas, enter this tournament, and send us all the money. You know, so, like, basically, if he failed, they would have probably, you know, killed him or something. But so at that point, it's like, you know, literally gambling with your life.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, that was kind of the crazy, you know, stuff where, I mean, I don't know. Crazy life. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, Brunson said when he wrote his book, you know, if I, you know, titled the book How to Win $1 Million Playing Poker, I would have had to come out with a second book that says How I Lost $1 Million Playing Golf. So,
another great poker movie for me was always Rounders. That's another one, too.
Dude,
that kind
Rounders
of,
is such a classic. Like, that's...
Like, it didn't make a whole lot of movie in the... A whole lot of movie. A whole lot of money in the theaters, but it's kind of become a cult classic with Matt Damon and...
Edward Norton.
Edward Norton.
But Malkovich is the Russian with the Oreos.
Yes. Freaking Malkovich is insane. It, like, one of the worst Russian accents, but yeah. It's
well,
so believable in that movie.
Sean Connery is a Russian. Where he didn't do anything but a Scottish accent.
The Scottish Russian. Oh.
The worst is the Duke John Wayne in Shanghai. Who plays a Swedish man.
Yes.
Is the John Wayne playing a Swedish person with an accent? Or when he was like Genghis Khan?
Yes. Oh, Genghis Khan with that, yeah, Texas accent. Well, Pilgrim, we're invading your country now.
Just something should not be.
Oh, and there's a story with Brunson. It was because after Matt Damon made that movie, they all thought they could actually go in and compete in the World Series of Poker. And it got down to he was playing with Brunson, and he went all in. He said Brunson is a little bit, he's like, hate to do this to you, Matty. Just puts him out of the tournament. It's like, yeah, you think you can, you know, write a script that you're going to win every game, but yeah, you're going to play with the big boys. You got to have some actual skill.
All right, good poker face. Skill's optional. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to hate on internet poker too bad, but I mean, to me, that just took the whole dynamic of the reason why I like sitting around a table of 8 or 10 people.
That's why I quit playing, like, you know, free poker at bars and stuff, because it was, you know, people, when there's no real money involved, people just make just stupid decisions. It's hard to make people do what you want to do when they're like, oh, this doesn't matter because it's not real money. And you'll see people staying with, like, the worst freaking hands and somehow just come out.
I mean, it's
there's
it's
way more luck in, like, free poker than there is in real poker.
I mean, there's a thing called odds. You know, even if there's a 2% chance of somebody hitting their hand, that 2% is going to happen.
But a professional would have known they had 2% and folded, like, long before. Oh. Yeah, Rounders came out in 1998, directed by John Dahl. It was basically a story of, you know, Matt Damon was a professional gambler in Vegas, and not Vegas, New York, and was, you know, trying to put together the money to go to Vegas and compete in the World Series, but he screwed up and played with the Russian Teddy KGB as the bad John Malkovich Oreo-addicted underground casino owner, and lost everything, and decided, well, I'm going to go to law school, I guess, because that's less of a gamble. But then his buddy Ed Norton gets out of prison and basically just, you know, pulls him back in, and they end up owing the mafia all kind of money because, you know, Norton's a screw-up, and he has to pretty much borrow from everybody and play Teddy KGB one more time. Which, the thing is funny, because, like, he originally gets the money he owes them, and he's like, yeah, aren't you? He's like, I'm still up from the last time I played you, you know, are you done? Like, you know, what does it say? He's like, you know, I give it to you again. It ropes him back in, but then, you know, Maddie actually beats him finally and goes off to Vegas to compete.
Steals all his Oreos.
Yep. And that is the dumbest tell, too. Oh, your tell is you have to, like, crack an Oreo, and depending on which side of the, you lick, it's whether or not you have good cards. Like, I've heard of Twitches, like, you know, grab, you're rubbing your face, whatever, but, how my cookie crumbles is dependent on my hand strength. It's just kind of a plot hole.
I don't know. It's almost an interesting form of teetotaling. Yes. Only with Oreos.
Teetotaling with Oreos. Maybe, yeah. Something to try.
I don't know. I just throw it out there.
I would totally, are you kidding me? Black and milk and Oreos?
Yeah.
Like. Mountain Dew and Twinkies.
Like, to have them at the same time, but not to, like, you know, sober dunk the Twinkie and Mountain Dew, it's kind of much. Plus, the Twinkie wouldn't absorb the Mountain Dew either.
No, those things are bulletproof.
They're the only thing that's going to survive the apocalypse.
Didn't they have, like, a Mountain Dew Twinkie, like, in the, it was, like, in the cream or something?
No, it
might have been an internet hoax, but I remember seeing, like, a green creamed
flavored Twinkies, the, like, batter. I made those are good.
Your blood is 50% Mountain Dew.
Oh, what? All right, it's because if you ever made Mountain Dew cupcakes, it's exactly the same recipe as, like, lemon.
Nope, yeah.
That
either. No.
Yeah, that sounds weird, too.
Yeah, I think you're the only one.
Anything Mountain Dew flavored ever. It's
I mixed bourbon and Mountain Dew one time, and it's not as good as rum and Coke.
Mountain Dew with? There's only two.
More Mountain Dew?
No, well, that, but Southern Comfort actually worked, and Everclear.
Yes, we'll agree with you with that.
Straight up, like, and they, and the
Southern Comfort and Mountain Dew, whatever.
Yeah, it actually, like, I tried. I was a bartender. I was like, all right, something's got to work with Mountain Dew. I have access to it. You know, it's always either Sprite or Coke or ginger ale. I'm like, something's got to work. And most of it is, you're like, oh, no, all right, this doesn't work. But, yeah, something about SoCo and Everclear, it's all about proportions. But they call it troll piss.
Nice. I think SoCo is just so freaking sweet itself that it just adds to the sweetness.
I think when I was an underage drinker in high school, our, like, drink of choice was Mountain Dew, Sprite, Blue Carousel, Everclear, and Strawberry Grenadine. It's called First Blood.
Oh.
That sounds like candy.
So, like, that was the only time I ever...
That's like, we made a drink one night. We called it Flesh Wound, because it wouldn't kill you. It just make you wish you were dead. It was... I think we just basically took everything in the liquor cabinet and mixed it together, and it was horrendous.
Those kind of drinks that make you think you're good at gambling.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I didn't feel like I was good
at anything. That's why they
give
you free drinks in Vegas if you're gambling. You pretty much, if you're gambling, they'll bring you free drinks. They want you to get drunk enough to, like, think you're good.
Gives you a Gatorback, say no. Because you know what a Gatorback is?
No.
All right, you know those mats they have at the bar?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's all the leftover liquid, including cleaning fluid.
Because my buddy used to call that Steve's Nasty Shot. You know, he's like, at the end of the night, he'd be like, who wants a free shot? And he's like, yeah. And someone usually dumb enough to, like, I'll take one. He's like, all right.
Or a cement mixer.
Oh, yeah, those are an evil shenanigan.
So you know what happens when
it's basically what Kahlua
and then accidentally put milk in how it curdles.
Yeah,
you take Bailey's
and they give it to you in two shots, so you stick it in your mouth and just swish it and it immediately hardens.
You do that, it's lime juice from Bailey's and it's
disgusting.
Yes, it solidifies and it's chunky as it's going down.
Oh, you can't even swallow it.
You do it on a dare.
That's what we all do. Someone's like, "Oh, you're 21. You should try this."
Yeah. And
like,
drink this; it's great.
If they're not smart and they let it sit, it's just worse. So it's like,
It's like doing a Irish car bomb and letting it sit. You got to drink that as soon as you get it, or it's gonna harden on you. So what else we made your list
Mavericks.
Of poker?
Maverick.
It's on the list.
It Nora
Psyche, sir.
It's an amazing movie.
Oh, it's a bloody awesome film.
Yeah, Mel Gibson came out in 1994. He played Maverick, based on an old TV show from the 50s, which had James Garner, who played Marshall Zane Cooper in the movie version, but he was the original Brett Maverick. it's a Richard Donner film who made like every great movie from the 80s. I mean, Goonies, Superman, Lethal Weapon.
I forget who plays the Native American.
I can't remember his name. So Joseph something.
They scam the
yes,
Russian
there's
guy.
There's a scene where basically, you know, the whole story of the movie is he's trying to get to a huge poker tournament, and there's a $25,000 buy-in, and he's like $3,000 short. So he's been going around kind of hitting up everybody that owed him money trying to get this, and they're, you know, going across country on a wagon trail and ends up running into these people that are supposedly robbed by Indians, and it's turned out to be some guys scamming him. But then actual Indians show up, but it's one of his, like, poker buddies, and he's like, no one else speaks whatever language it was. So he's like, "Hey, I want you to point at everybody and just look angry." That whole conversation where they're like, where no one else has gone, and he's like, "Yeah, tell them you want the woman." And he's like, "Oh, they say that we've trespassed on their land, and one of us is going to have to go with them. And if I can pass the Indian bravery test, they'll let us go." What's that? Well, they chop off both your hands, and if you don't scream, you pass the test. So they all think he's going off to his death, and he's just really going to go help him scam some like Russian hunter guy.
Yeah, just that whole dynamic was very interesting in itself. Just like,
yeah, he's like,
he's trying to collect a grand from him, and then like the Native American guy, he's telling the Russian, he's like, he needs $1,000, and he's like, "Well, how much would it cost to shoot him?" And he's like, $2,000.
Yes.
So he's going to get his. He's like, "I got to collect."
Especially like, "Well, I can only get you 500.
Yeah.
And then he's like, "Yeah." End up scanning for 2,000. He's like, "Hey, I got you the whole 1,000, man." He end up coming up on it.
Oh, wow. You're late. Of course.
And the white rabbit has just entered the podcast.
That hat.
Oh, but yeah, when it gets to the actual tournament too, there are so many cameos hidden in that movie. Like, pretty much everyone who ever worked with Richard Donner got a small piece of that movie. In fact, there's like toward the first of the movie, he goes into this bank to get some money that's owed him, and he gets robbed. And the guys robbing him is Corey Feldman and Danny Glover, and then some other guy. And he like pulls Danny Glover's mask off, and they both look at each other for a minute, like, "Nah, we don't know." they end up blowing up the bank, and like when he's leaving, he's like, "I'm getting too old for this shit." But yeah, when they get into the actual tournament, one of the dealers is actually the captain from Lethal Weapon. There's a bunch of country singers hidden in there. Like, one of the guys that gets caught
Clint
cheating
Black
thrown
is
off.
In there.
Yeah, it's Clint Black. Vince Gill's in there. Waylon Jennings is in there at one point.
Because back in the day, that's what they did at the...
yeah, pretty much just hid their buddies in their films.
In the old Western shows, they would bring in, like, the country singers.
And who was it? Yeah, Waylon Jennings gets thrown out because him and his wife are like carrying guns, and he's like his wife pulls out a gun, and they're like, "We're gonna have to throw you off the boat." And he's like, "Oh no, that's her gun." Because first he's like, "No, that's my gun." He's like, "Well, can you swim, sir?" No, those are her guns. I've never seen those before. Just throws his wife under the bus. And then also, what's the name? Uncle Jesse. Was it Denver Pyle? Anyway, Uncle Jesse from Dukes of Hazzard is one of the gamblers who also gets caught cheating and gets thrown off the boat by James Garner. But he's like, you know, yeah, can you give me a chance, sir? And he's like, yes. So he like holds his hat and jumps off the boat and goes out like a man.
Wow, that's great. I haven't seen that movie forever.
And of course, like at the end of the movie, you find out that he's actually, James Garner's actually Maverick's father, and they had this whole scam going to begin with because, you know, pretty much everybody was cheating. Yeah. And
he's trying to, like, Jodie Foster's
cheat the cheats.
Cheat them. And then
she sneaks up on him and figures the whole thing out.
That one, though, is Garner was the original Maverick television show, and, you know, having, like, it was like a good passing of the torch thing.
Yeah, it could have almost been, like, you know, in the same continuity.
Because
Cooper was like a fake name, and he really was like, you know, the original guy that happened, and now his son is the one out there scamming people. And the whole thing at the end where he's like, he knows they're cheating, so one guy gets 4/8, the other guy gets, was a flush, and then he's got might have been a straight, and he's got one card for a royal flush, so you know he's going to go all in, but he sees that they're cheating, and he's just like, you know, calls, you know, well, we can't change it now. He's like, all right, well, just give me one random card off the top of the deck, and doesn't look at it. And everyone's like, you know, pushing all in. They're like, not going to look at your cards? Like, nope, just going to call blind. And but, of course, he has the ace of spades and wins the whole thing. And then you're like, I got to know, how did you? And he's like, you won't believe me. He's like, I'm your father. I'll believe you. Magic.
Right.
But then, of course, Jodie Foster shows up and steals half of the money back. And he's like, well, why don't you let her take it? He's like, I'm going to have fun getting it back. That's how you flirt in the Old West. You get robbed. that's how con men pick each other up.
That's the thing between her and Mel Gibson. They go back and forth the entire movie.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Somebody scamming somebody.
I thought the whole, you know, when she washes his shirt and that, you know, it shrinks up, like he's more pissed off about that than, you know, her stealing his wallet or any of the other stuff.
And when they run into the Russian guy again, and he's like, oh, I'm Agent Maverick from the Indian Army. I'm investigating a murder. He's like, how much will it cost me to make this go away?
$6,000.
We'll cut you a deal. $6,000. Ends up taking his whole wallet.
Oh. You never mess with Mel Gibson when it comes to his money.
Hey, Payback. That's another great classic Mel Gibson movie.
You mean a classic Michael Caine movie? Because that was a great movie.
Oh.
Talking about current movies, okay.
Both movies are pretty old, all right?
Payback was in the 90s.
Speaking of,
we're old, dude. Most kids these days don't think of the 90s as recent.
Damn. Speaking of bad poker movies, there's one I found when we were doing some called Shade. Has anyone ever heard of Shade? Oh, it stars Sylvester Stallone as a, you know, old-time professional gambler, and there's a barely. The budget of this movie was $10 million. It made $500,000. It only got released in 6 theaters and lasted like 3 weeks, and they pulled it. It was like, you know, almost non-existent. But it's available on the internet as everything
so
is.
It's not the
Expendables. No, it's kind of like a bad Ocean's 11. Because there's these three professional con men who are, you know, basically going around rigging these poker games, and Mel Gibson, or Sylvester Stallone's character, is basically like the most legendary cheat in like all of it. He's the dudes with like the little metal things coming up out of his hands and like all these like basically magic, and they're like, if we can con him, it's the like we are the best cheaters if we can, you know. So they end up, Jimmy Fox is in it. It's had a big cast for a movie that made zero money, but yeah, it's
horrible.
It's hard to make a movie about con men, and because there's so much like sleight of hand when it comes to like
Grifters is a great movie.
But yeah, it's pretty much, you know, like I said, it starts off, there's like a whole thing where he is at a poker game, and it's like a young version of Stallone, and he's cheating, and he's right as he's about to like hustle all these mafia guys, somebody else comes in and robs the game, So they're all like, you know, put your hands up. And he's like, can't, because he's got a freaking king stuck up his sleeve. And they finally, like, make him put his sleeve. When he puts his hands up, all the other gamblers see he's been cheating the whole time. And this huge, like, gun battle breaks out. And, like, everybody dies except for Stallone and, like, one of the other gangsters. And so they're like, we could kill each other, or we could, like, cut the deck, and whoever gets the high card wins. So they put their money down, and, you know, they cut the card, and the one guy pulls, like, a king, and Stallone pulls, a three. But, of course, he's a cheater. He's got to cheat one more time, and he, like, switches it to an ace, and then the gun battle starts over again. He ends up shooting the guy, and, like, blood splatters all over the cards, and, it's, you know, the grifters are all like, that's just freaking urban legend and shit. So, like, you know, at the end of it, you find out that Stallone was working with one of the kids in the group that was, so they were conning his people. So at the end of it, when he's like, kind of like blesses him as the new best thing, he throws him the ace of spades. It's still got all the blood on it of course you're going to keep evidence that you've committed a murder with you for, you know, as a lucky charm for the last 30 years.
We used to play spades back in college all the time. Have you ever seen, Now You See Me? That's a good movie. That's more about magicians.
Yeah, but it's a con game. Like, it really is.
That's the main character, and I can't remember his name in this movie, because, like I said, it's a forgettable movie. That's where he learned how to grift, is he was actually a member of the Magic Castle. At one part, they're hiding from the mafia, because he's like, nobody will find us here, and he, like, takes his crew to, like, the Magic Castle, and they run into some old magician that had taught him all these card tricks. So, I mean, that's why Penn and Teller are outlawed from doing any gambling, because, like, magicians are like, no, you're not coming. Like, we'll let you play in our bar at the casino, but we're not letting you play touch any cards.
I don't know. Card counting's always the one that gets people.
I'm not good enough at math to do that.
There's a movie they did about the actual, like,
MIT. Yeah, the MIT Blackjack Club. That's why you always see it's like, you know, these MIT guys doing that stuff, because, yeah, without some kind of mechanical assistance, it's, yeah.
Or Rain
Man. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I forgot about Rain Man, too. But, yeah, it's like, as soon as his brother finds out that he's like, can count anything, he's like, that's, of course, the first thing you do. Like, we're going to Vegas. If I had a brother that was like that, I would take him to Vegas, too.
In the scene where they knocks over the waitress,
yeah.
As soon as they hit the floor, he's like 257. She's like, what, 257? And then he picks him up and counts him with 257 toothpicks. They, like, instantly saw it.
Genius. Going to Vegas. Can you count anything, Brad? Because, like I said, we could just go to Vegas. How many sheets of paper you got? Just throw them up and count them real quick.
37.
We'll do it.
We're gone.
Oh. So what else you got there?
I don't know. I mean, for me, like I said, I touched on A Big Hand for the Little Lady. I thought that was a really interesting film. You know, Rounders, there was, you know, the all-in poker documentary that was just absolutely really good. You know, that's really been my top picks right there, you know, those five or six.
You got any cool poker stories?
Man, I'll tell you, like, poker is the one game, I think, that it doesn't matter how many games you played, everybody has always got their bad beat story. They can remember the time of day, what the weather was like, what position at the table they were in, exactly what card everybody had, but they can't tell you about what happened yesterday during their day-to-day. Like,
no one ever remembers the successes. It's always the bad losses that stick with you. So, what about, you know, open up the audience, you know, what's y'all's favorite poker movie or show or anything? Does anything pop into your head?
My favorite was 21, so. I think
we
already talked about all of them, didn't we?
Yeah, we covered most of them. Covered a lot of them.
Yeah, probably my favorite.
Like, I mean, and there's so many, like, gamblers, too. I mean, take it to Star Wars, freaking... I've always wanted to see, like, you know, they always talk about whatever Sabacc, and, like, you know, that's how, you know, Han Solo got the Millennium Falcon, was in a big, or at least that's how it is in the expanded universe. It doesn't exist anymore, but that's a whole other topic to piss me
for
off
for another day.
But I've always wanted to see, like, how that game is actually played. Like, they need to put that in, like, one of the new movies, because, I mean, as big as Star Wars, that could sell some money. Like, you come up with a real version of Sabacc.
They made the Firefly game, the tall card.
Yeah.
Made that. Sabacc, the card randomized.
yeah. at certain points, so they would have to have electronic cards.
I mean, this. I mean, because I remember I've been at a there was a casino that basically they couldn't use live cards, like some weird law when they first opened up, so it was all digital stuff. And they literally had a poker table that was like an LED, big LED screen that would project the cards when they finally put in like a poker room until they finally, like, after so many years, they finally got it where they could use real cards. But that was always interesting, where it was like, it was like playing online Cherokee, poker, right? But you're actually sitting with people.
So there's one that I'm sure you haven't mentioned because this is super nerdy, but there's a character, there's a poker themed character in an anime called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which is to describe this anime.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventures is what I did last night.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is an acid trip. It's wonderful. The original manga like author was obsessed with 90s metal and pop music. The main villain is Dio. There are twin villains named Oingo and Boingo.
Nice.
The main character, Jotaro Joestar, or otherwise known as Jojo, looks like Prince from Purple Rain. the good guy company that ferries them all around is REO Speedwagon.
Nice.
It's insane. But one of the characters is Daniel J. Darby, and he, in order to best him, you had to beat him in poker. And if you lost, he would take your soul and turn it into a poker chip. And he had like briefcases full of.
I think I'm gonna have to watch this now.
It's pretty amazing.
It's definitely not a poker movie, but one of my favorite moments in the movie was Beer Fest in the very beginning. It starts off super serious poker game, money on the table, big looking Russian
coin flips.
They're playing quarters, and
that's right.
Yeah, you think it's like some underground poker game, and they're playing quarters, and it turns out it's the funeral director and his father's funeral, her grandfather's funeral. Oh.
Not my
head. Oh, well, like, I mean, even taking it to, like, comic books, I mean, the character of Gambit, I mean, he's, like, his choice of weapons, a deck of cards.
Have you ever seen any of Ricky Jay's stand-up?
No.
All right, so Ricky Jay has a couple of stand-up acts. The one that you can probably find on Netflix or wherever you can find streaming content is usually Ricky Jay and his 52 assistants. Ricky Jay used to be a professional poker player, then became a magician, and then became a stand-up comedian, essentially. And you'll see him in a lot of poker movies as the guy that they go to for the high-tech gadget or, like, the old man consultant type of thing. He was even, I think, a guest star in a couple of James Bond films. I mean, he's like this bit character actor.
He's like Q in real life.
But if you see him, like his bit is he'll do card tricks and a lot of close-up magic. But then he'll also do, the Gambit when you think of it, is he always thought that idea of like throwing a card as a weapon sounded really great, but he realized that the physics of it is near impossible to pull off. And he was like, unless you have it down, and it's all you do.
Yeah.
And so we tell this really kind of funny story about he would just practice whenever he wasn't doing anything. And it got to the point where you figure it out. And so part of the act is he'll get a watermelon and literally just cut it in half.
Yeah, there's
cards. It's disturbing how accurate he is.
There's a professional gambler, Chris Ferguson. They call him Jesus because he wears like a cowboy hat and has like a long beard. But yeah, that's one of his things. He is deadly with a deck of cards. I've seen him on like Conan and stuff doing that, like hitting a watermelon and stuff with like a deck of cards.
Yeah. But the thing is, Ricky Jay is one of the first guys, famously, that kind of made that bit like really popular. But much like a lot of folks that are card carrying holders in Magic Castle, he taught a lot of people, and he would sit there and like teach them all these tricks and all that stuff.
I've seen professional gamblers like really betting on Rochambeau. I mean, and yeah, that's not the old dirty joke where you know you kick a guy in the nuts, but no, like actual rock paper scissors. The technical name for it is Rochambeau, and they will like bet on they will. Gamblers will bet on anything. I mean, they'll bet on like what time the card is going to show up to pick them up.
My favorite thing when I was in Vegas, my favorite thing that I saw on the pools reader was the Little League World Series. They were literally betting on a bunch of kids playing baseball, and I was just like, wow, this is a new low. I'm in Vegas. All right, this is great.
The concept of using cards as a weapon always feels like a bad like Family Guy joke.
Yes.
Like, you know, somebody flicks a card, like, ow! Did it cut? No.
No.
Ow!
Got a paper cut.
What's the newer version of It's Mad, Mad, Mad World?
Rat Race.
Rat Race. Okay, talking about betting on extreme things.
because it's all these, you know, multi-million billionaires, and John Cleese is the eccentric leader, and he gets his... It's Dave Thomas from...
from Wendy's?
No. from...
the singer?
Strange Brew. And so they got him in this hotel room, and he opens the door, and it's clearly a prostitute, and she's like, okay, so normal charges. He's like, hold up, I have a couple stipulations. One, we get in the hot tub. Sounds good. Two, it's filled with Pepto-Bismol. Okay. Three, we make paper hats for each other while you, I think she, like, that gives him a manicure. And he's like, so how much roughly would a party like that cost? And she's like, well, for that excitement, I'd have to say around $3,000. And like, the room looks empty behind him. That all the multimillionaires come out like, who had the closest to $3 million? Like, they're all saying, how much should we charge for this kind of night?
Oh my god, I remember that scene. Right?
And he's just like, he's so like awkwardly like, so we start in the hot tub filled with Pepto-Bismol. The list just gets more and more insane. But the other one is they're in a hotel.
What made me so sad about that movie is that most folks had no idea it was a giant love letter to It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Let me tell you, I had a weird, like, Rounders has always been my favorite poker movie, and a friend of mine, I was visiting him, and like some emergency came up, and he's like, I've got to run. So he had like a newborn like baby at the time, and I'm like, dude, yeah. He had like his wife's car broke down. I'm like, I was like, go pay. I'll sit here with the kid, you know, until you get back. I'm like, I can watch a kid for 5 minutes. I can keep something alive for maybe 10. You're longer than that, we're gambling. And I put in Rounders. He comes back in. I'm sitting there with the kid, like, you know, watching Rounders. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, teaching her poker. I mean, you got to learn sometime. I'm like, you know, she knows now not to draw to a gut shot straight. it's like, I'll teach her, you know, I'm going to teach her bluff here in a minute. But yeah, it's like, I'm sitting there, like, you know, telling this kid about poker theory. I'm like, okay, no one else to talk to.
It's not a poker movie, but there's a movie that revolves around, like, a betting vendetta called Lucky Number 11.
Yes.
Oh, dude, that movie is awesome.
That's a really good one.
But it isn't really about the gambling, but it centers around a gambling sort of, like, culture. It's a pretty good movie.
Well, I mean, we got about another, you know, 10, 15 minutes to go. What's y'all's favorite thing, since we are at the symposium? What's anything cool y'all have seen this weekend that stands out for you?
I saw Hugh dressed as a rabbit.
Yes!
That's been
pretty... Barley races were entertaining.
Oh, yeah, we actually went in for the Nerf duel, and the most hilarious thing was there was this little girl wanted to come up and try around. And she got shot in the face.
Get your eye out.
It was just, everyone is like, you know, it's like, you won, but you won by shooting a small child in the face. Even the host is like, dude, you just shot a small child in the face.
I just would have shot the kid again.
But he did get on his knees and let the kid shoot him in the face as payback. But that was hilarious.
Back to better payback movie is the one with Michael Caine.
Michael Caine,
a great review. Ah, the man with a thousand voices.
It's the size of a tangerine. It's like the only Michael Caine I can quote from Batman. Oh. So what about you? What's you know, your favorite gambler?
I don't know. I think Brunson. I mean, just, you know, his attitude, and I mean, he's not super flashy. You know, he's not a, you know, Johnny or, you know, over the top like Helmuth. I mean, he's much like myself. He's just calm, cool, collected, doesn't get super emotional, just goes in, does what he does best, and walks away.
Yeah, he's also kind of one of the reasons why, you know, Texas Hold'em is played in Vegas nowadays, because that, you know, as the name, and now it came from Texas. It was a bunch of old Texas road gamblers traveling from city to city, you know, playing cards, you know, Dole Brunson, Armando Slim, you know, and they eventually brought that game to Vegas. And, you know, and like I said, that's one of the reasons they call it, like, the Cadillac of poker, and it's what decides who the world champion. They play, you know, all kind of pokers at the World Series of Poker, but the main event has always been decided by a game of Texas Hold'em, because it's like, so there's, like I said, it's one of the only games where you can have absolutely nothing and still win.
I actually have a question.
Yes.
If you guys were going to play a game chance and poker was off the table, what would be your next go-to game?
Blackjack.
Blackjack.
I don't know. It's like
Blackjack, because the odds are in my favor, and that's the reason when I go to casinos and stuff like that, you won't find me at a slot machine or anything, because I don't like for everything to go to the house, and I don't like for everything to just be luck and chance. So Blackjack, you can still rely on strategy, and it's not just, you know, a luck of the draw.
Yeah, but you're also relying on the other people at the table to do what they're supposed to do a lot of times.
And
I go with cockfighting myself. That's just Puerto Rican in me.
What you do in the shower, we don't want to know about.
I live in, my family's from a very rural side of Puerto Rico. My first memory of visiting my grandfather in Puerto Rico when I was a kid, he took me to a cockfighting tournament. And if you're like 8 or 9 years old and you see that, it leaves an impression. We'll just say that.
Also, yeah. Being Puerto Rican, I don't remember cockfights, but I do remember having to kneel on dry rice as punishment.
Oh, yeah, you want to? Okay.
Kneel on dry rice.
Yes. Try it. No, dude, it's painful.
No, like, I can imagine that, but I've never heard that, you know, as a as an actual method of punishment.
For 30 minutes. But, Joe, how about you? What would be your next go-to game?
Oh, a game. I don't know, can you bet on Cards Against Humanity?
I think
you've
just proven you can bet on anything.
Yes. Oh, I don't know.
The odds are, depending on the size of the box you use, you take, you know, like, the odds of how many people like throws down the I'm Batman, because that guarantees the winning.
And the D's not cards, that's the automatic win.
Winning cards always are like Anne Frank or KKK. You know? Really un-PC humor.
I won with this hand. I had the best one with Tony when he was down with his thing.
Oh! You took a picture of that one. Yeah. Posted it. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. Oh, God, what was it? He said, it's like, my mother saw me on this website and, like, I was, you know, banned from looking at it. And it was a twofer. And it was like,
I think for me, like, if I had to gamble on a game and poker was off the table, we'd do shots. Like in Indiana Jones, where she's in the bar going shot. I'm a big guy. I might die afterward, but, you know, it takes a little bit for the drunk to get to me. So I think my opponent, unless, you know, we're equal size, will pass out first. Yeah, I might die of alcohol poisoning afterward, but I'm going to win the bet that night. Yes.
There's big betting on that one.
Turn the hat and go crazy.
Now, what was it, the fly, the arm wrestling, where he snaps the dude's wrist and comes out of his own arm on camera?
That was disgusting.
Yeah, he was pretty fly for a white guy.
It's cool. It's like the fly wrist snap was like a random thing they did where they just made it up on the day. And like, what can we do? And like, well, we can just put a stick underneath and glue something over it and just paint it to look like skin. When he just bends his wrist and...
Oh, yeah, that is so disgusting.
It's such a gruesome moment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And we could, I mean, we're at the symposium. We can go bet on Nerf dueling and teapot racing.
Umbrella fencing tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to... I signed up for that one. I just want to win one of those indestructible umbrellas.
That's exactly why I entered. Because if I went home and I went, hey, honey, I got this great umbrella. It's indestructible, and we use it as a weapon. And if I said, she'd be great, how much did it cost? And if I told her the retail price, she'd say,
yes.
That's why I've been doing the raffle.
What is the indestructible umbrella?
It's literally a tactical combat umbrella.
Yeah, suppose you can just, like, beat the crap out of it and it doesn't break. It's basically a baton that happens to be an umbrella.
A Sapporo can of umbrellas?
Yes. It's insane. Like, I'd never heard about it until I saw the whole umbrella fencing thing, but... All right. Can you sword fight without making lightsaber sounds? So that's going to be the hard part of the...
Easily. Why would I bother making lightsaber sounds?
You just keep
Star Wars. That's awesome. All right, get the fuck out.
Ladies and gentlemen, a hipster.
Friggin' hipster rabbit.
Hipster bunny says Star Wars is done.
Puerto Rican hipster.
with his baby Jesus beer.
Here in the market for a new world's most interesting man.
You baby Jesus. Because this beer is literally called Sweet Baby Jesus.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, it was what I had before this one.
Because of the name. That was...
What's great is I'm driving up from Atlanta. I went to Jungle Gyms, and the box says, "One sip of this, and y'all will be saying, 'Sweet baby Jesus.'" And I went, "That's marketing. I got this. No problem." And it's like peanut butter chocolate
pour. And like I said, being a cigar nerd, there's always somebody smoking a cigar in a poker movie. That's like required. I mean, even like they've made smoking illegal. You always find a poker game going on in a cigar bar. Like, I don't think I've ever been in a cigar bar that did not have a poker table. It's kind of like, you know, peanut butter and jelly. You're smoking cigars, you're going to eventually, like, you know, pull out a deck of cards and...
How about that? Cigar
choice? I'll get on kick. Like, I'll smoke something for a while and then you burn out. So, my current cigar right now is the Punch Signature Series. That's the one I've been, like, smoking the crap out of lately. I mean, right now I gotta wrap this up. I got a AJ Fernandez New World. That's the other thing about since we left Atlanta where it was 70 and we get here where it's 30 and the wind's blowing. It's a little cold out there. We had one before the podcast, and I'm like, I've lost all feeling in my hand. Like,
we drove down from Michigan where we left like 29 degrees.
So it's at least warmed up for y'all.
So yeah, you're on the Punch Signatures, and I don't know, my favorite is probably the Padron 1926.
Opus X is kind of like the go-to special occasion cigar, but for me, I think it's the Lito Gomez Small Batch. Like that, I love that cigar, and it's one of those that, the first time I smoked one, and they're a long cigar, and it's... supposedly, like, really powerful. Like, you know, the guy that was talking to me, like, yeah, you try that, it's going to probably make you sick. You're like, I'm like, challenge accepted. So I'm smoking that thing, and I'm sitting in a chair, like, the whole time. And he comes by, he's like, "How's the big boy treating you?" I'm like, "I don't know what you're talking about. This ain't that strong." And I go to leave, and I almost fall over. It's like I've been drinking the whole time. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's where the strength... It snuck up on me. I'm like, I'm going to have to sit down here a little bit more. I got to sober up from the cigar before I can walk out of here.
I was a casual cigar smoker, and my buddy told me, he's like, yeah, if you ever... He's like, you should never buy a cigar over $20 unless you're really serious about
yes.
it. And I was like, okay, challenge accepted. So I bought like a $25, $30 Arturo Fuente.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a nice like crystallized cigar. And we went and we had drinks and I smoked it for like an hour. It was a nice like medium-sized cigar. And I just remember I was sitting and I stood up and I was like, nope. Something's just extremely wrong.
Yes.
I don't think I've really smoked a cigar since then.
Yeah, if you don't smoke that much, you got to start with a milder cigar and work your way up to like the strong ones. Except for me, because I'm stupid like that. Like, the first cigar I smoked was a Rocky Patel Edge, and they at the time they didn't even have a label on them. This came in this big brown wooden box, and it said on the box "for serious smokers only," like warning. I'm like, challenge accepted. It, like that was like my go-to cigar for a long time.
It's like, how do you market something without the use of sex? Challenge a man.
Yes, like I said, you threaten a man's manhood. You know, like, and, hell, that's where you end up winning in poker a lot of times. Challenge, just make somebody, like, you know, you're not going to call this bet. Yeah, you know, put somebody on tilt. Oh, that's the easiest way to win a game.
I found the winning hand.
What's
got
that?
With. My mom freaked out when she looked at my browser history and found whitepeople.com/thedevilhimself. And I was like, I won with that.
And on that note, pick up our business cards. They're on the back table back there. You'll be able to download this episode in about a week. And if you're here at the symposium and want to know more about cigars, we're doing a intro to cigars panels tomorrow at 3:00. So see y'all then. Thanks for coming out and seeing us.
If you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows that the secret to surviving is knowing what to play. throw away, knowing what to keep. 'Cause every hand's a winner and every hand's a loser, and the best that you can hope for is to die in your sleep. And when he finished speaking, he turned back toward the window, crushed out a cigarette, faded off to sleep. And somewhere in the darkness, the gambler, he broke even. But in his final words, I found an ace that I could keep.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And we're back. It's time for some Beer 30. So pour them if you got them. What are we drinking this week, Brad?
Well, this week we are drinking Jailhouse Brewing Judge Barley Wine.
Another local brewery out of Hampton, Georgia. Set in an old jail is there where their building is. Hence the name and the theme of all their beers.
Well, I think this one's kind of cool. You know, so this is the first part of the what Jailhouse Brewing is calling the Justice Series. So if you look at the artwork on the bottle, it actually depicts a judge. And then as the other beers come out, you can put them all in a line, and it'll depict an entire courtroom scene.
Yeah, the second release is going to be the jury, and the final release will be the jailer. And this the first edition is a barley wine. No news on what the other two will be, but it's not a bad barley wine.
No, I mean, it's exactly what I would expect. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's got a decadent flavor. I mean, I really enjoy a barley wine. You know, it has some of the fruit essence, you know, but once again, I mean, it's definitely got that nice mouthfeel. I think it's probably a little bit cool now because, you know, on the back end of the palate and in the throat, very much has a strong hoppy finish. I mean, the hops are quite prominent, but I think as the beer comes up to temperature, you know, that hoppiness is going to mellow out, and then, you know, a lot of the other flavors are going to come forth.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a very aromatic, you know, kind of fruity, a typical, you know, barley wine fashion. But yeah, this is a damn good beer.
Absolutely. I don't know. I mean, I've really liked the stuff that Jailhouse has been doing. So, you know, I mean, and
yeah, their breakout stout's good. The, was it the Mugshot IPA, the Misdemeanor, I believe it's an ale. They've even had the Tramp Stamp, is that Clown Shoes? I can't remember. But yeah, they have a bunch of different beers. That's another brewery we'll have to check out eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I, you know, living here in the Atlanta area, love to support the, you know, the local brews and everything else. So, you know, it's nice, you know, to see the explosion, you know, in the, you know, Georgia, you know, area as a whole, but specifically, you know, the Atlanta area. I mean, it's just, you know, you got breweries popping up left and right, and I mean, I just love it. I mean, you know, it's,
and the judge is always the big imposing, you know, figure in a courtroom, or at least in, that's how it's just depicted in movies and whatnot. And this is definitely a big and imposing beer.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's definitely a full bodied beer. I mean, you definitely have a good solid mouthfeel, and you know, I gotta say, man, just, you know, to speak to the quality of the beer, you know, the lacing on the glass is just, you know, intense, and you know, the aromas and everything else. I mean, this is just spot on. You know, when a beer has a good, you know, so much of taste is based around aroma, and a lot of people, you know, miss out on that aspect of things. So,
oh yeah, and I lost my thought there. yeah, I'm quite impressed with it so far.
Oh yeah, definitely. So, you know, I'll be curious to try the other beers in the series and everything else, and you know, we'll be able to depict our courtroom scene. I don't know, you know,
it's kind of fitting that we have the judge with the big Ross Harris case, you know, taking place this week and everything. So, I mean, that's probably made international news at this point. So, I don't know. Kind of fitting, but...
What do you rate this beer?
I'm at a 4.5 on this one as of right now. And like I said, I think once it warms up a little bit, I think I'm going to be at a solid 5, but, you know, that's TBD.
Alrighty.
What are you thinking?
Yeah, it's a solid 4.5 for me as well. It's pushing for a 5. It's a good beer. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And we're back, ready to get scientific up in here. I mean, we did come back from a steampunk symposium, so it's all a little bit about mad scientist shit. Things might curse my mouth there for a second.
So we're just going to, you know, put some gears on this segment and call it steampunk? Is that what we're doing?
Exactly.
some 1980s junk?
Oh, well, have you ever been accused of... Failing to have empathy for others because you're a man.
I don't know if it's so much that I'm a man, but you know, I've definitely been called an asshole, and you know, I brand myself quite well, I believe.
Well, a new study published in the Journal of Psychoneurodictynology, that's a big word, has basically...
How many times did you, you know, have to...
Several. But, yeah, this new study is saying that testosterone actually decreases the ability to feel empathy by, you know, interrupting those parts of the brain that normally feels empathy for others and then connects those feelings to your decision-making ability.
So we found the root cause of the asshole. You might just be born that way.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was because I reached in my pocket and pulled out 0 fucks, but it's because I'm loaded with testosterone, apparently. Because in earlier studies...
I mean, we do have beards.
Yeah. In earlier studies, they kind of determined that women scored better on tests that had to do with empathetic responses, like looking at just pictures of people's faces and eyes and kind of determining what their mental state is just from their body language and vision. And women all scored higher on that test. And scientists at Uratech University kind of wanted to explain that. So they did another test with all women. And basically half the group they gave a dose of testosterone to and then a placebo to the other half of the group. And the group that had been doped up with testosterone, their empathetic ability actually went down on subsequent tests.
So does that mean all guys are assholes?
No, but it gives us a good excuse. If you get accused of being an asshole, you'll be just like, baby, I just got a lot of testosterone. And that's like why...
I'm an early bloomer.
That's why they say that, you know, testosterone leads to, like, you know, why men get into more bar fights and whatnot. It's because we're all jacked up on that, you know, testosterone.
We're on that juice, man.
Awesome.
We are juiced.
Yes.
What is next, my friend?
Well, you know, Batman v Superman, while Wonder Woman watches, just came out. And any old-school DC fan remembers, before they started making Wonder Woman fly, she always had the invisible plane. Well, Japanese builders are making an invisible train.
That just sounds dangerous. I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, maybe Japanese folks are smarter than the average American folks, but, man, we got a lot of dumbasses here that just, you know, seem to be like, oh, there's a train. Let me just park in front of it. Like, surely it's going to stop.
Enough people walk out in front of trains that it is without having an invisible one.
Yes, which, like,
this
I mean...
technically not going to be invisible. Cebu Railways, one of the companies who actually built the world's fastest train, has just contracted designer Kazuo Sejong to build them a train that will basically blend into the environment and, you know, make it, you know, they're all about the you know, function and design of stuff, instead of taking away from the environment, blends in with its environment. So basically this train is going to be covered in reflective panels that kind of display the, you know, area around them. So if you see this train, you know, going through the countryside, you're just going to see reflections of the countryside around it and not this ugly white Amtrak train blowing through the countryside.
I'm just wondering how many birds, like, birds do not do well with mirrors or windows.
I mean, who gets to be the guy that has to Windex that motherfucker?
Oh my God. I don't know. Like, I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, what is this? Is this like a, it's like a blimp on a track. Like, that's what this thing reminds me of.
It's all blimps and shit.
And we call that steampunk.
I mean, it's going to look cool as hell, but yeah, it's,
I mean, I definitely see, you know, the kind of the creation, you know, the harmony between nature and not wanting to cause major disruptions and stuff like that. I, you know, we see that a lot, at least I do, in this area with, you know, a lot of the power poles now, even though they're metal, they have like fake tree branches and stuff.
Yeah.
So birds can still, you know, build nests and all kinds of things. So,
yeah, and I've seen where they've, like, you know, kind of built, like, you know, cell towers and stuff inside of fake trees or fake hillsides and stuff, just so it doesn't, you know, screw up the natural environment, or at least the beauty of nature. It's kind of cool.
Man, we're some hippie motherfuckers.
And they've kind of already used this concept on some buildings in Japan that are covered in the reflective sheets and stuff to kind of...
Well, I mean, I've seen, you know, like, people do on a much smaller scale, like tree houses and stuff like that, and you know, that actually looks pretty cool. I mean, like, I'm thinking, like, if you had a deer stand that was reflective or something, like, but see, now I'm causing a disharmony in nature, because I'm like, I'm thinking, oh, there's going to be some meat on my plate.
It's like, I don't know if you saw that story. There was a place, and I can't remember where it was at, where they built a building that was highly reflective, but it, instead of being, like, a straight-up boxy building, it was kind of concave, and it actually focused the sunlight that was reflecting off of it, kind of like a magnifying glass, and end up melting somebody's car that was parked across from the building. They didn't like take into how the light reflects when they designed the building, and it basically created a death ray.
That is crazy. Not sure if reflective building or death ray.
Man, oh, yeah,
that would suck. That, you're sitting in your car at lunch break or something, like, man, it's getting really fucking hot in here. Like,
damn.
Little do you know, you are the ant.
Yeah, they had to paint up like a no parking zone. So any asshole that parks in the no parking zone, his car ends up getting melted. That's the way to keep people from parking there. And speaking of nature, remember the old Princess Bride movie?
Yes.
One of the things in the dark forest or whatever it was the RUSS's rats of unusual size. Well, apparently they've just discovered an actual giant rat, or, well, yeah, gianter than most rats we know of, on Manus Islands in the South Pacific. They've discovered a new species of rat called Rattus detentus, which is the Latin word detained. And it's basically, these rats are huge, but they're kind of scarce. Like, they're kind of hard to find. So they've been kind of theorizing that these things exist for like around 30 years, and they've actually finally found some skeletons and remains of them to prove they actually exist.
Is this a rat or is it a possum?
No, it's a big ass rat, and apparently it's got really sharp teeth. That's one of the things that they've been noticing is you know, bites taken out of like really hard you know, coconuts and stuff.
Well, I mean, I guess if you're on an island or something, I mean, you would adapt. You would have to, you know, have that. I mean, you know, I've got pet rats, and dude, their teeth are not exactly like soft. I mean, you know, I mean, they're cracking nuts and, you know, chewing on wood blocks and all kinds of stuff. Like, it's nobody's business. So,
yeah, it's one of the largest rats to be found across the entire Malian archipelago, weighing in at around 1.1 pounds. But it's still not the biggest rat in the world. The Bazavi woolly rat weighs up to 3.5 pounds. That's a big fucking rat.
Yes. Like, it's, you know, like, you know, here at the local fairs and stuff, they have the exhibit, like, see the world's largest, you know, rodent and stuff like that. Like, I never was like, oh, let me contribute a dollar to go see what it is. But I always imagine, you know, somebody having a possum or something in there.
Oh.
Or some sort of marsupial that was kind of uncommon. But,
something
but this is not a marsupial. This is, you know, a full-on, you know.
Could you imagine setting out like a mouse trap in your kitchen and you come to find this thing that's like the size of a small dog?
Yeah, that's called a bear trap.
Yeah, it's pretty much just wearing the rat trap at that point, like looking at you like, bitch, I'll cut you.
Like, huh, I think we got a problem. Like, it's only on its toenail.
Put down the rat trap, grab the shotgun. It's going to get rough in here.
Instead of a, little slice of cheese or something like that, you're going to have to give it like an entire cheese block. Like,
full wheel on a, like, you need to build like the life-size version of that game Rat Trap. Let's take up a whole room of your house.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. Now I'm thinking,
This all could be like an elaborate viral marketing campaign for Ninja Turtles.
When I was younger, I used to watch some horror movie called Rats, and the way this movie was shot, it's probably from the 1970s or something. But, you know, they used just your normal, you know, fancy rat during the filming and stuff like that. And I'm like, man, somebody should do a remake and, you know, have the giant ass rats out there attacking people.
Oh, and it's not science without our killer robot story of the week. And this is a literal killer robot. You ever heard of the Great Barrier Reef in Australia?
Yes.
Well, apparently it's in
that
danger.
That is a place. It does exist for all of you in doubt.
Apparently, it's kind of in danger from these things called crown of thorn starfish. They call these things the zombies of the ocean because they're extremely hard to kill. Like, if you chop them in half, they become two starfishes. You really have to completely decimate the entire body to kill this thing or inject it with poison salts, which not harmful to us or other sea life, but is harmful to them. And so right now, scientists at the Institute for Future Environments at Queensland University of Technology have come up with this thing they're calling the COTSBOT. It's a 4.5 foot long robot sub that hunts down coral-eating starfish and injects them with poison. These things can operate for 8 hours completely on their own, hunting these starfishes.
You know, I have a pet peeve with the website source here. I have an ad blocker installed. So, you know, as soon as I try to click on or scroll down the article, I get this, here's the thing with ad blockers. We get it. You don't like ads, but ads help us keep the light on. So either whitelist or pay us a dollar. Like, I'm boycotting this website now, and I actually really like this website, but
I mean, it's on wired.com, so turn off your ad blockers and click the link in the show notes if you want to check it out.
I should not have to. Like, if I want to support you, make it worth my while to support you. Don't force me to support you, like, because I'm not going to do it. I'm going to say there's a million other web sources out there, and here's the middle finger. Or actually, you know what? Let me reach into my pocket and pull out zero fucks.
Anyway, the scientist behind this project is Matthew Dunbabin, the bot's inventor and principal research fellow at the Institute. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of badass. It's a freaking... But then again, this could be the precursor to the hunter-killer drones from Skynet.
I mean, I feel like any time we're talking about killer robot anything, it is a precursor to Skynet because, yeah, everything is for good. But what happens when it's like, oh, look at this. We can inject scuba divers just as easily as we can inject starfish. Or,
starfish.
You know, dear God, man.
Jeez. Bad shit happens when robots take over. And speaking of which, that leads us into my final story. there's actually an article that fear of robot uprising is hampering the development of AI. We've done our part. We've spread fear of the oncoming robot apocalypse, and we're actually fighting it back against Skynet.
Or at least the person of this article is. There is at least one other person that is as paranoid about Skynet as we are.
I mean, when... Chris Bishop, director of Microsoft Research, is claims that's one of the things that's like society's fear of AIs is what's, you know, hampering our ability to develop AI. But hey, man, when genius inventors like, you know, Elon Musk, aka our real version of Tony Stark, has developed a fund to fight against the development of aggressive AI, you gotta start wondering. Like, when you know, just me and you talking in the basement, ah, those fuckers are paranoid. When people a lot smarter and richer than us, I mean, even Hawking has kind of warned about, you know, making robots that can think for themselves. You gotta start to pay attention. But then again, the one person who is fighting against the AIs is also making, you know, robot cars and spaceships that land themselves. So he may actually be like a real life Bond villain. He's like, you know, yes, yes, we must fight against the robots. Well, all the time he's making the robots.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, people could be like, eh, I don't know. I hope people have our best interests at heart. I hope that we're trying to avoid, you know, the, you know, overtaking of the
robot. He does have a slightly German accent, which makes him a little bit crazy. I mean, he could be a Bond villain. That's all I'm saying. I hope he's not. He makes some really cool shit. The Tesla cars are badass. But
not sure if Savior or Bond villain.
Yeah. Like, could be either one. I'm hoping Elon Musk is one of the good guys. Yes. He's doing some great things. But yeah, who knows? I mean, he may be the one that builds Skynet.
I mean, you know, how many freedoms have we lost? You know, or, you know, how much are people willing to give to, you know, feel that they're safe? And all the while, somebody's just manipulating that fear.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
We have slain many dragons. We are the Polyhedron Society. We have braved the depths of Gallowspire. We are the Polyhedron Society. We have maintained the masquerade. We are the Polyhedron Society. We shot first. We are the Polyhedron Society. And we aim to misbehave because we are the Polyhedron Society. The Polyhedron Society proudly presents its actual play RPG podcast. Tune in each week as we immerse you in one of many stories through the art of collective storytelling and role-playing games. The Polyhedron Society has decades of gaming experience, and we use that experience to create rich characters and lavish stories.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. So, with no further ado, have you tried any of the OmniGang, any of the Game of Thrones beers that they've released?
I think I had that first one, if I vaguely remember it. I don't think we've tried it on the podcast, but I believe I've had one.
Yeah, I've had the one, and I've seen it oftentimes. I don't remember what it was, but it comes in a gift set oftentimes with a glass of its own and stuff like that. And I've enjoyed that beer. But they've got a new one they're adding to the Game of Thrones edition. This one is called Seven Kingdoms, and it's going to be a Hoppy Wheat Ale.
I just want the Dragon's Blood edition. That's
yeah.
I got Dragon's Blood.
Yes. So, you know, with this beer, it's going to be a traditional Belgian-style wheat and, you know, have a hop-forward American ale with a strong... it comes in at 6.9% ABV, so, you know, I'm kind of curious. You know, to see how the blends and everything else are going to come together and, you know, a little bit of a hop addition to the traditional Belgian. I'm kind of curious. Like, I'm typically not a hop head or a big hop fan or anything, but, you know, it doesn't.
Yeah, I did like a good Belgian wit.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have or seem to have that, you know, IPA quality to it. So I don't think it's going to be, you know, that hoppy of a bastard. So I might be able to get behind this, but, you know, it should be in bars later this month from what we're seeing and what I'm reading and everything. So I don't know. Just be curious to, you know, see how it turns out. So a little bit of, you know, nerd brew news, I suppose.
That may be a new segment.
Up next in nerd brew. You know, Marvel's Luke Cage series, you know, I really liked, you know, the Luke Cage character and Jessica Jones and the Netflix series and everything else. But a Tribe Called Quest, Ali Shaheed and Adrian Young are set to score Marvel's Luke Cage film.
Sweet.
So, you know, I don't know. You know, I've liked, you know, some of Tribe Called Quest music and stuff like that. So having these guys, you know, do some of the score and everything else, I think it's going to be, you know, pretty cool. So,
yeah,
you know.
I've heard we're kind of taking a break from the Hell's Kitchen setting, and this series may actually be set in Harlem. So Tribe Called Quest doing the scores and the soundtrack, that's going to be pretty cool, pretty fitting for the character of Luke Cage.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, it's described as being very sophisticated, you know, and that 90s, you know, hip-hop vibe and everything. I mean, I really dig a lot of, you know, the 90s hip-hop before it all just became, you know, booty, booty, booty.
When you never wear.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and the, that's actually, we did get a small teaser for that at the end of Daredevil this season as well, so. That's going to be a pretty cool show. A little bit funnier than what we've seen out of the Marvel's Netflix series. Because they've tendency to be a little dark. Kind of cool to lighten things up a bit.
And I've really dug, you know, the darker essence there. But it'd be curious, you know, to see how the film score and everything else plays into the series.
Did you see the news that they've... The Defender series, which is going to be all the Marvel Netflix guys, their miniseries movie, whatever it's going to be, is actually going to start filming later this year, and they've got its, you know, director, show lead, or whatever, and it's going to be the same guys that are behind the Marvel Daredevil series. So, like, I mean, they've done a real good job on that, so I'm kind of cool. It's kind of cool that they're going to handle the group picture at the end of it all.
Yeah, I don't know, you know. So, you know, we'll just have to stay tuned, see how the series plays out. But it's set to be released on Netflix September 30th. So,
Luke Cage, not
Luke Cage, Defenders. Yes, not Defenders. All right. So, up next, we had the wrap up of The Walking Dead. I have not seen it yet. I'm so like far behind, but.
Thing about being on a road trip, man. I'm like, my DVR backlog is getting thick.
I mean, mine. I would love to be able to just blame it on a road trip, but life has just been busy in general. So, you know. But Fear the Walking Dead has been renewed for a third season, and I'm not exactly sure how I feel about that.
I've not watched that. I'd like watched the first couple episodes, and I'm like, I did not give a shit about the characters. I mean, I care about Rick and his crew, but. These guys, I'm just like, no, it's so, yeah, I mean, maybe it's gotten good since I turned it off, but yeah, I've not watched any of the Fear of the Walking Dead.
I mean, I started getting into it, and it was definitely latter on.
I mean, I'll catch up whenever it hits Netflix and give it a shot.
I mean, it was, you know, probably episode 4 or so before I was like, all right, this has got the propensity to be pretty good, but... You know, it just didn't have the same feel. And
two zombies in the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and they did progress and get more zombies, and it did, you know, kind of start to feel semi-quasi-Walking Dead-ish, but, you know, I guess not having the comic backstory and everything else, I mean, I'm like you. I'm not invested in the storyline, the characters. Like, maybe if this had debuted...
There's no Daryl. Fuck that.
Well, you know, I mean... Had this debuted, I think, before The Walking Dead, you know, had been on for, you know, what, 4 or 5 seasons at that point, maybe even more. I don't even know what season we're on now. I don't know. I we'll just have to see. But on to something that I am absolutely stoked for. Batman, Killing Joke movie.
Yes.
And it got the R rating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, We talked about the DC Animated Universe last week, and oh, I love that so much. I mean, the video version of The Dark Knight Returns was so badass. I'm looking forward to, especially since it's getting an R rating, they're going to probably stay pretty true to the comics. And I'm pretty well. Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy has returned, haven't it? I believe I've read that, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yes, Kevin Conroy will be voicing Batman, and then Mark Hamill the Joker, and then you got Tara Strong as Batgirl.
Yeah, because Tara did a lot of the voices from the old animated series, and you know Mark at one point said he was retired from doing the voice of the Joker after the last Arkham City or game. So he was like, I will come back if you do the Killing Joke. Because that was the one thing he like really wanted to do was that Joker. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this when it comes out.
Yeah, and I mean the Killing Joke has so much history and everything. So I mean, I don't know. I mean, it was designed to be dark and everything. And I think the R rating, I'm just absolutely stoked and excited. Like, it's weird that when it comes to DC, I get so much more stoked for the animated stuff than I do a lot of the live action films.
Yeah. I mean, if you've not read The Killing Joke, go pick up the trade, the graphic novel. It is worth a read.
Yeah. I think it's probably one of my favorite, you know, graphic novels that DC has put out.
And speaking of DC news.
Which one?
There's your transition into the new Suicide Squad trailer we just got.
Oh yeah. So, you know, with Suicide Squad, the whole Blitzkrieg bop, you know, just, I don't know, man. I'm really digging the way that they're...
Yeah, I was kind of worried when they announced they were filming some new scenes because of supposedly the backlash of Batman v Superman trying to add... They've said add more comedy or add more action, depending on which sources you listen to.
And it wasn't the Blitzkrieg bop, it's the damn ballroom blitz. Damn it.
Yeah, like
I was
like
doing so good before I fucked that up.
Like the other trailer that had a badass soundtrack, this one also got a pretty badass soundtrack and actually showed a little bit more of the characters interacting and more of the action.
You just like to see more of Harley.
Yes. I gotta say, she is Harley Quinn come to life. I mean, it is. I'm sold.
Oh yeah, I'm a little bit hesitant because of the rewrites and everything. Like, oftentimes with films, when they go through a big rewrite like that, it kind of ruins things. So I'm a little bit apprehensive from that aspect, but. Still, I mean, you know, the cast, the characters and everything, I'm still excited. It's probably, you know, outside of the Killing Joke, this is the next DC film that I'm excited for.
Yeah. I was actually looking forward to this one.
And even the standalone Batman film, I'm anticipating, but Suicide Squad right now is higher up on that list, I think.
Yeah, I was actually looking more forward to that than I was the Batman v Superman. But, I mean, it has recently been announced that Affleck is directing his solo Batman movie. And Affleck, you know, he's not just the guy from Mallrats. He's actually turned into a damn good director. And of all the hate that I had for Batman v Superman, the highlight of that movie was him as Batman. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do when he's, you know, in the driver's seat of that character.
Oh yeah, no, I think it's going to be awesome.
Oh, so. I mean, that movie though, was it the Town? I mean, he can direct action and stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does.
Yeah, and I think he takes the role very seriously and everything else. So I've got high hopes. That's just further down the path in Suicide Squad. So, you know, as more news and stuff like that gets released, we'll keep everybody updated from that front. Another thing that I'm excited about, so we got a new poster and a trailer released for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And, you know, I'm so excited this time around because this film is not going to be centered around Megan Fox like the previous version. So.
Oh, yeah, this one looks... That and the last one had that badass, Run DMC cover. This trailer had a badass Beastie Boys cover, I think it was. And, yeah, it's... It's going to be awesome. If nothing else, this movie's going to have an awesome soundtrack.
Well, and I mean, you know, the turtles and their interaction and everything, it feels like the turtles. And, you know, seeing Casey Jones in action and kicking ass and...
Street hockey Oliver Queen.
You know, seeing Bebop and Rocksteady, especially, you know, in this trailer, Rocksteady in the fucking tank and, yes. You know, stuff like that. Like, I'm just absolutely stoked for, so... I think this film is going to be what I was expecting out of the first film. So I think that Michael Bay has probably, you know, realized that, I didn't necessarily do the fans justice. So let me make this feel more like the Turtles and less like Transformers.
That's kind of like I was talking about earlier, the G.I. Joe movie. The second one is way better than the first one. It's like they've tried to bring back these old cartoon characters and just not done them right the first go round and... You know, kind of learn their lessons on their second try. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing this movie.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the other highlights, you know, was, you know, Baxter Stockman, Krang. So I mean, it just seems like we're going to have everything that we could want out of a film. I hope the trailers aren't the highlights because the trailer has me extremely excited, and I hope it doesn't fucking end up being a disappointment.
I love me some Turtle Van.
Yeah. I mean, dude, that was probably one of my favorite toys as a kid.
And Mikey's a bad mother chucker.
Yes. you know, a couple other films. Let's talk a little bit about Star Wars. So we got, you know, Rogue One, a Star Wars story. We've got the teaser trailer.
Yep.
And I got to say... As far as the trailer's concerned and the way that the movie looks, I'm absolutely excited for it. I'm not sold on the name.
Yeah. That's my only bitch about this movie. Because, put that aside for a second, the trailer looks badass. I mean, it's all the space fighting we know from Star Wars. This is the ground fighting Star Wars that we've never seen before. This looks more like Star Wars than The Force Awakens did, because this is the stuff we're familiar with. It's set previous to the Battle of Yavin. It's a story of the crew that steals the original Death Star plans. I mean, in the trailers, it's this awesome reveal of you see this Star Destroyer. Looks like it's in, like, just the black of space. Then all of a sudden, the shadow passes, and it's actually in front of the Death Star. And you see them installing the big laser dish. I was like... Freaking awesome.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I like you
freaking
said,
AT-ATs and original OG stormtroopers, not the creepy smiling first yes. order troopers. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, I was not, you know, completely sold. The stormtrooper mask were just I don't know. I just couldn't get past them, but
Mon Mothma, freaking General Dodonda's in the trailer. I'm just like, and rumor has it, well, I think it's actually been confirmed at this point, but Darth Vader is going to be in this movie. I mean, it's the right time frame where he is the, you know, the villain. I mean, you can't do this story without throwing some Vader in there.
Yes, absolutely. So, I don't know. I'm excited. We'll just have to keep our...
So, what do you think of the controversy that's been going on online about Disney princessifying Star Wars? I mean, there's a female lead in The Force Awakens, and now people are bitching because there's another female lead in this Rogue One movie.
You know what? It still feels like Star Wars, and I've got to say, they haven't sucked, so I'm not going to hate on it too bad. You know, I'm not one that reads a lot into political correctness and everything else, so...
I think it being a Disney property now and having two back-to-back female leads kind of scares some people that, oh my god, it's going to be all girls, but I don't care. I mean, if you've read the Star Wars Expanded Universe and even the original Star Wars, there's a lot of strong female characters. I mean... Mara Jade, Han Solo's daughter, Jaina Solo, Princess Leia, like all these people were total badasses in the old expanded universe. So it's nothing new to real Star Wars fans that have consumed everything, but it's, you know, maybe a little shocker to the new generation fanboys.
But, you know, that's what I got to say. Like, if you rewind, you know, back when Star Wars was originally released, I mean, that was kind of the thing was... You know, having more female presence and everything else. I mean, you know, Star Wars at its core did a lot of groundbreaking things that in society at that time was not as politically correct and trying to, you know, read into everything like today's society. Yeah. So, you know, if you're a fanboy or whatever and you're concerned, then please go back, rewatch original Star Wars, do some research. Read a little bit deeper into it, and
Leia was a badass.
Yes, you know, I'm sure your eyes will open, and you'll be, oh yeah, I can see, and that's why I don't really have any concerns at this point. Now, if we get Star Wars meets Princess Bride or something, then maybe
I don't know. Princess Bride is pretty badass.
You know,
movie.
I mean.
And speaking of which,
or maybe Star Wars versus Pocahontas.
Okay, yeah, maybe that one. Yes, they turn the Ewoks into the Seven Dwarfs. It may be bad, but and also in the trailer we see whatever Danny Chen, your freaking IP man, the badass kung fu dude himself, is playing a character in this movie and beating the shit out of some stormtroopers with a staff.
Yes,
I can't wait to see
that.
The full,
was one of
the full version
highlights.
Of that scene. My only complaint, like I said, based on it on its own. Loved it. My only complaint is the title, because if you are a fan of the expanded universe, when they announced they were making a movie called Rogue One, you expected it to be a movie about Rogue Squadron. I've heard so many people be like, oh yeah, it's going to be that X-Wing movie. Sorry to disappoint you, kids. It's not going to be that X-Wing movie.
But you know what? It is going to be a lot of the ground fighting and everything else that I've longed for, because I've envisioned these battles after reading the books and everything in my head. So just to see that play out in live action on the big screen is just going to be mesmerizing.
If you're
going
to call it Rogue One, it needs to be Top Gun in space.
Yes.
And Rogue Squadron was not formed until after the Battle of Yavin. Yeah. Rogue One is either Luke Skywalker or Wedge Antilles. That's it. Unless they somehow tie this into, oh, these people all got killed or whatever, so we're going to name our new squadron in dedication to them and form Rogue Squadron. Tie it in somehow, because right now, like, they should have called it something else. Because yes. That's just pisses me off. But
maybe they should just call it a Star Wars story.
There you go. You know, the freaking, you know, Oceans, whatever, Akbar's 12 or something instead of Ocean's 11. You know, it's but yeah.
I'm sure there would be some trademark issues going on there. But.
Rogue One should be an X-Wing movie. That's all I'm saying. But other than that, I it looks awesome. I can't wait to see it.
All right. Another movie that I think looks awesome. So we got the Doctor Strange trailer. And I don't know.
It looks pretty cool.
It does. I'm not sure really what to expect out of the film or anything.
I gotta say, Cumberbatch's American accent though, it's kind of weird. He kind of sounds like whatever Tom Skerritt or whatever.
Yes,
it's weird hearing him speak with an American accent.
Yeah, I don't know. So you know, that's the film I'm going to continue to follow, and as I see more, form a more educated opinion. But as of right now,
I do like the clothing scene from that, where he's walking up the steps in the full costume, and you see the big window. He's obviously in the Sanctum Sanctorum.
Yep.
I was like, that's going to be awesome.
And, we were talking a little bit off air, but, it's kind of to your point, the whole, the punch and the soul getting
yes.
stolen. I'm like, yes.
That's a hell of a hit right there.
Yeah.
I'm going to punch you so hard, I'm going to knock your soul out.
And, with some further speculation, I'm going to close on. So there's rumors that 50 Cent, Curtis Jackson, maybe, having a role in the upcoming Predator movie. So
interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. You got director Shane Black. He's, Iron Man 3. So, I don't know, I've seen 50 Cent in some of his other roles acting, and, he might be fitting for a Predator movie. I mean,
But I don't know about that director, because that was, my least favorite of the Iron Man series was Iron Man 3.
But, maybe a Predator film, vastly different than Iron Man. So, I'm going to say TBD. I haven't seen enough to form an
turn down for what?
Yeah, an educated opinion as of yet. So,
as we kind of wrap things up here, what was your thoughts on the symposium? How did you like being, our first panels and first official live shows in front of a studio audience?
Oh, it was a good time. I always the atmosphere at an AnacroCon and stuff like that is awesome here in the Atlanta area. But, I mean, that was, you know, once again, the atmosphere there is vastly different. I mean, just running into so many interesting people. And then, you know, it was also crazy seeing a lot of familiar faces, you know. So, you know, it was cool kind of, you know, seeing that community, like, no matter, you know, if it's Atlanta, Chattanooga, or Cincinnati, like, you see a lot of familiar folks. Yeah. And, you know, to be able to hang out with your friends and everything to that nature. I really did like a lot of the games and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big highlight for me. So, you know, it's kind of like the Steampunk Olympics in a sense.
Yeah, and you know, shout out to
shout out to me for winning the Nerf duel.
And shout out to Aloysius Fox and the Pandora Society for letting us come up there
absolutely.
And share our brand of shenanigans with the Steampunk crew. And as we also wrap up, what do you think about this cigar?
So, you know, my thoughts on the cigar is once I got down to, you know, the halfway to the final third, I started to pick up on some of the spice notes and everything. I'm a big fan of the Banker. I think the original blend is more my style. This was just something about it was just lacking, you know, and I think a lot of it is having that old school mentality. You know, it didn't quite have the bold flavor that, you know, the more updated blend has.
Yeah, but it's based off that old blend, and cigars tend to be a little milder back then than they are now.
So, I mean, you know, if you know, it was the 1840s, and, you know, hey, it's probably a damn good smoke. But, you know, compared to what I had before, you know, I would say that on a scale of 1 to 5, this was probably a 4. The Banker, in my opinion, is a 5.
Alrighty then. And with that, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com, or we're also on the ESO Network, ESOPodcast.com. Pick up your nerd gear clothing at Zazzle.com/CigarNerdsPodcast or Real Men Smoke Cigars so you can get your cool Cigar Nerd smoking shirt. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Cigar Nerd Pod. And as always, shuffle up and deal. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.